Thanks for having me. I hope you'll bear with me. I'm kind of new to PowerPoint. But I'm here tonight in part because earlier this year, several of your members infiltrated one of our RAM clinics. And I have proof. So RAM was started in 1985. And the main purpose of RAM was to provide medical and dental care to people in remote areas that didn't have access. Our first RAM clinic was to Mexico, a little tiny village there, and a bunch of physicians and dentists climbed in a rented van and drove down from Knoxville. The idea was to practice for these by doing some clinics in the rural areas around Tennessee, and come to find out there was as much need in Tennessee and Virginia and around us as there is overseas. The founder of RAM is a guy named Stan Brock, and you probably would maybe remember him better from this. So Stan was the original co-star of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. I graduated from dental school in 1988 and went to practice in a small town north of Knoxville called Maynardville. And we have a lot of patients who are Medicaid patients. And I noticed that the parents would bring in the kids and they'd sit over in the corner and they'd cover their mouth because when they'd remove their hand, they'd have rotten teeth. And so as a new dentist with student loans and practice loans, there wasn't any way to treat them free of charge forever. So the solution came when Stan Brock called me at the office and told me about RAM and asked me to volunteer. That weekend, two guys in a pickup truck showed up with three old dental chairs and loaded them into the basement of the health department, and we spent the next 2 days extracting teeth. So that was a pretty good start. One of our several people have asked me what we were going to do now that the Affordable Care Act is in place, that we would have nothing left to do. So one of our RAM volunteers had this to say about that. His name is Bob Fiella, and he's president of the American Dental Association.
Change the disease rate in the population. Community water fluoridation, school-based sealing programs, those are just two examples. And the third is to expand and strengthen the safety net so that patients have a sustainable solution long-term.
All these years later, people are still losing teeth in these mountains. I would love to have seen the Affordable Care Act include dentistry for adults, but it didn't. So states are faced with really tough decisions. The states that are looking to expand Medicaid are looking at expanding Medicaid for adults and dental benefits for adults, and it's a very expensive proposition. But a lot of these folks are working, but without access to dental care.
Now, the Affordable Care Act has expanded Medicaid almost 84% in the next 5 years for adults. It's entirely bypassed the adult population for dental needs. This dental divide can't be treated to the point where it doesn't exist.
The thing that the Affordable Care Act will do, which would be very helpful here, is if states do the Medicaid expansion, about two-thirds of the patients who are here will then be covered for medical care, and they can get primary physicians in their own communities and not come. But it is the case that even in Medicaid, we do not have the access to dental care that we should. Dentistry access, the number of dentists we train, the number of dentists who, are in communities like this, it's not enough. So we ought to be looking at reforms to Medicaid to expand dentistry, and we ought to be...
And so remote area medical serves as a bridge over the gap of the fractured health care access, and the ACA does not change this. We do a lot of clinics, and when I was preparing for this, I looked back at old pictures, and I think I probably have 15 or 20,000. I won't show all, maybe a third of them. But this is This is the one that my new friends invaded in the Knoxville Jacobs building. One of the great things about doing these clinics is you meet some really neat people and develop, you know, lifelong friendships. We don't just do it in auditoriums. We also do it in sports stadiums. This is at Lincoln Memorial University. We don't do all of them inside either. Sometimes we have to go to where the patient is. This is under the bridge in Knoxville, and there are several families living there without any access. And it was about 20 degrees that day. Another outdoor clinic that we do is what you're seeing here. If you look in the background, the dark stripe that looks like a road and the one below it that kind of looks like a wall, that's sort of what it is. That's the Bristol Motor Speedway, and we do a clinic there every year. So you can go anywhere and set these up. We don't stay in the urban areas either. Sometimes we go a long way away. This is a little village called Atka, Alaska, and it's out in the Bering Sea, one of the Aleutian Islands. And we got a call, and the only way to get dental care there is to ship in a dentist and his equipment. And the weather is so unpredictable that sometimes the plane has to be turned away. And the last dentist that had been there had been 3 years ago, and his equipment didn't make it. So he sat there, and then the next plane didn't come in, and the next plane didn't come in. He was there 2 weeks with nothing to do. And the only thing to do on this island is to chase reindeer. There's nothing there. So here's another shot of it. And the big blue-green building in the middle is where we worked. It was the rec center. So we just set up our clinic right there on the pool table. We also do some disaster relief stuff. This is in New Orleans. This is actually the 5-year anniversary of Katrina. We were there twice before that. And in fact, Ram was on the ground before FEMA. When Katrina happened. I love this picture. The dentist and his assistant are so happy, and the patient's going, "You aren't going to hurt me, are you?" So wherever we go, people wait. This was the line at the first Katrina clinic that we did. And it just went on for miles and miles. And even at the Knoxville clinic, you see long lines. People get there at 10 o'clock at night, the night before, to get a number to get seen. Recently, 5 or so years ago, we had the opportunity to buy a transporter for our equipment. And this was a retired auto racing team, the American Le Mans Series Mazda factory team, was retiring, and so we were able to purchase this at a great discount. It's a double decker. The top layer where they kept the cars, we're able to store 50 dental units, portable dental units. And in the downstairs, we have eyeglass labs that can make up to 300 pairs of glasses a day. That's one of the four stations. So what we do with RAM is we provide professionals a way to do what they want to do, a way to help people. These are completely set up by RAM and organized by RAM, and the dentist and physicians have to show up and work. 45% of attendees haven't seen the dentist in 5 years or more. And this is a cute picture of the kid, but in reality, these are the people that we see. So when RAM shows up and unloads all the equipment, this is kind of what it looks in the extraction area. As you might think, we're pretty good at extractions. Everybody wants to do them because you can get in there and you remove the tooth and then everybody goes home happy. we're not so good at replacing them until recently, and making a denture is a long, drawn-out process. There's a lot of manual labor, a lot of pouring things up and waiting, and so it's not really practical because we're in and out in 2 or 3 days. But recently, one of our volunteers has invented a denture system that you can actually make a set of dentures that's a pretty nice set in about 20 minutes an arch. It's amazing. Now, these two have never been to one of our RAM clinics, but if they had, they might leave looking like that. In a minute it will. There's none right now. So you can see what a difference it makes. And that's funny, but if you look at these folks, and then after, I mean, look at the difference in her eyes. It's not her mouth. This is Scotty Miller.
Volunteer dentist, Scott Miller. So thanks. Awesome. I mean, the only thing I can do that I can change somebody's life. But it's awesome. It's great. It's rewarding. That's what brings me back every year.
So we don't always do all of our clinics in the U.S. We recently got a call from some volunteers with the Catholic ministry, and they have a village that they take care of in the mountains outside of Port-au-Prince. And it just so happened to be the epicenter of the cholera outbreak. So they needed doctors. You know, they needed a way to get patients out of there. It's an all-day hike to get out. And so we loaded dental and medical supplies in the RAM DC-3 that actually dropped troops at Normandy, too. And we also dropped in a few of our RAM airborne volunteers. And some of us took the safe way in. So we also took along the lady in the sunglasses is Ann Curry, and a film crew from Dateline. They went with us to watch. We were able to ride partway up the mountain in the back of the truck, but up about 5 miles before the village, we couldn't drive any further, so we had to stop and hike. Beautiful scenery, though. And these kids hike back and forth to school. I think they hike 5 miles each way to the little village that most of the time was real sleepy little village. But twice a week they had the marketplace. And there were 40,000 people within walking distance. And I think half of them came twice a week. This is the Mador Hilton where we stayed. And it you know, it looks pretty peaceful there until you realize that when I step back to take the picture again, we were very popular. We could hardly sleep for them walking around the tents. I don't know what they were looking for. But here is my dental clinic, and it's in the back of the church, and the only lighting is what you can see, the grates over the door and the open doorway, and after about 5 minutes in there working, all of those patients would move into the doorway, and before you knew it, they would be right up against you, be completely surrounded, so you could hardly talk or work at all. And then this was our little clinic. So we had the portable unit there, and then we had a Honda generator. The other thing that the RAM Airborne guys did was they built a runway so that we could do an air ambulance, and they worked hard at that. You can see some of the work in progress, especially the guy in the red shirt and the yellow shirt were hard at it. But they got $2 a day and breakfast and lunch, which is basically beans and rice. So the runway went well, and this tree eventually was cut down. But when the day before we were supposed to leave, they announced the election results, and there was rioting in Port-au-Prince. As we went up to dinner that night, Ann Curry was on the back porch live on NBC News saying the situation in Port-au-Prince is terrible, and there's rioting, they're burning cars and buildings, and they're targeting healthcare workers. My socks even had Ram logos on them. There was no way to go down there. So there was a place on the hill where you could stand out on a limb and reach out and get cell phone coverage. And we were able to contact a minister that we'd met on the way in, and he arranged for the first landing at the Maydor airport. So he took us out and then took us up to Dominican Republic to get out. So if you want to go ahead and play that. Oh, I'm okay. That's me then. And this is kind of what we do.
One of the decisive issues in the presidential campaign is likely to be health insurance. Texas and Ohio vote on Tuesday, and those states alone have nearly 7 million uninsured residents. Nationwide, 47 million have no health insurance. But that's just the start, because millions more are underinsured, unable to pay their deductibles or get access to dental care. Recently, we heard about an American relief organization that airdrops doctors and medicine into the jungles of the Amazon. It's called Remote Area Medical, or RAM for short. Remote Area Medical sets up emergency clinics where the needs are greatest. But these days, that's not the Amazon. This charity, founded to help people who can't reach medical care, now finds itself throwing America a lifeline. In a matter of hours, Remote Area Medical set up its massive clinic in an exhibit hall for a weekend in Knoxville, Tennessee. Tools for dentists were laid out by the yard. Optometrists prepared to make hundreds of pairs of glasses. General medical doctors set up for whatever might come through the door. Nearly everything is donated. Everyone is a volunteer. The care is free, but no one could say how many patients might show up. The first clue came a little before midnight when Stan Brock, the founder of Remote Area Medical, opened the gate outside the exhibit hall. The clinic wouldn't open for 7 hours, but people in pain didn't want a chance being left out. State guardsmen came in for crowd control. They handed out what would become precious slips of paper. Numbered tickets to board what amounted to a medical lifeboat.
We brought some snacks and a blanket.
Well, I hope to stay warm. It's kind of chilly tonight.
It was 27 degrees. The young and the old would spend the night in their cars, running the engine for heat, but not too much, not at $3 a gallon. At 5 a.m., we took a walk through the parking lot.
How long have you been out here tonight?
We got up at 3 o'clock this morning, and we got here about 4. We've been out here for a little while. It's cold.
Why'd you come so early?
Because we wanted to be seen.
Marty Tankersley came with his wife and his daughter, asleep behind the front seats.
You drove 200 miles to get here?
Yes, sir.
And slept in this parking lot for 7 or more hours?
Yes, sir.
Just to have this done?
Yes, sir. I've been in some very excruciating pain.
He had an infected tooth that had been killing him for weeks. Most of the people who filled the lot heard about the clinic on the news or by word of mouth, and they came by the hundreds.
We're very happy that you're here this morning. We've got a lot of really fine volunteer doctors, dentists, eye specialists.
Stan Brock calls RAM clinics medical expeditions. He takes all comers, but just for the weekend.
When you set up the first expedition in the United States, were you surprised at the number of people who came?
Yes. Yes, I was. And the numbers are getting higher. And I don't know if it's because we're getting better known
or the health care in this country is getting worse. Who's got number one? Come on down. Number one. Number two.
On Saturday at 6 a.m., they entered by the numbers.
Number three.
Inside, 276 volunteers from 11 states were waiting.
Are you here for medical, dental, or vision?
When's the last time you had a breast exam and got a nurse or a doctor? Ever?
25 years ago.
For those who were diagnosed with cancer today, or diabetes or heart disease, RAM will try to find a volunteer doctor who will follow up. Ross Isaacs is one of the doctors.
Who are these patients?
It's the working poor, middle of their lives, most with families, most not substance abusers, and employed without adequate insurance.
Dr. Isaacs saw Marty Tankersley, the man we met in the parking lot who'd driven 200 miles. It turned out that Tankersley, a few years back, had two heart attacks and heart surgery, but almost no follow-up since.
So you haven't seen somebody in a while with regards to your ticker and stuff.
The Tankersleys live in Dalton, Georgia. They fall in the category of the underinsured. Marty's a truck driver. He has major medical insurance through his employer, but the deductible is $500, really unaffordable. And the dental insurance costs too much. No one really knows just how many Americans are underinsured, like the Tankersleys.
He's the lucky one that could drive the 200 miles. He's the lucky one that got to see people today and get hooked in. There are tens of hundreds of thousands of people like him.
Marty, his wife, and daughter were seen for checkups, glasses, mammograms, and the yanking of that agonizing tooth.
This has truly been a godsend to us, to me and my family, and to all the hundreds of people that's here. I see the faces, the relief in the faces. This has been a wonderful thing.
This was Ram's 524th expedition.
5814, come in.
Ram took off in 1992, airlifting relief to Latin America. And at age 71, Stan Brock still flies the antique fleet. That C-47 flew on D-Day. Brock is British by birth, an adventurer at heart. He was a cowboy in the Amazon, and then, incredibly, he was discovered by TV's Wild Kingdom. Brock became a star, sort of a naturalist daredevil.
It took only a moment for the situation to totally reverse itself.
Today, Brock is devoted to Ram, completely devoted. He has no family, takes no salary, has no home. Brock lives in an abandoned school that the city of Knoxville leases to Ram for a dollar. Until recently, he took showers in the courtyard with a hose.
When we see what we've seen over the last weekend, how do you pay for all of that?
In the first place, we really know how to stretch the dollar. We operate entirely on the generosity of the American people. I'd like to say that we had big corporate support in America, but we don't. So it's those little checks from those people that send in the $5 and the $10.
Ram operates on a shoestring, about $250,000 a year. And yet last year, it treated 17,000 patients. On this Saturday, there was no sign of a letup.
What have you accomplished today?
Well, we've basically had 600 or so people that have arrived here overnight, and we were able to do just about everybody. I think we may have turned away about 15 people who are going to come back tomorrow morning anyway.
The next day, Sunday, there were hundreds more. Tickets started again with the number one, but now the doctors were racing time. In hours, they'd be headed home.
Who's got 361? 362? 362? 363?
We're really glad that you came in.
Nurse practitioner Teresa Gardner was worried about Rebecca McWilliams. McWilliams had surgery for cervical cancer in 2005, but without the recommended follow-up.
How long has it been?
It's been about two years since I've had my last pap smear, and I was supposed to have it every 6 months, and I've really only had it once since that surgery.
You know, I think many doctors would say you've taken a terrible risk.
Yeah.
Waiting this long.
I really have, but it's just, like I said, it's very hard to afford it. I have three kids, and my husband lost his job this past summer.
McWilliams' pap smear came back clear, but in her exam, Gardner found reason to worry.
I think just from, you know, the clinical inspection of the cervix that, you know, possibly there is a possibility of that cancer, you know, still being there.
She's 28 years old.
28 years old, the mother of three.
You've created this medical organization that was designed to go into third world countries, to go into remote places, and now you're doing 60% of your work in urban and rural America. What are we supposed to make of that?
That for 50 million or so people in this country, the one thing that is on their mind is, what if I have a catastrophic event, a car crash, a heart attack?
Because they don't have health insurance.
Because I either have no health insurance or I'm underinsured. And so this is a very, very weighty thing to be thinking about, knowing that your family is in great jeopardy.
376, 377, 378, 379, 380.
Late on Sunday, Joanne Ford's number was among the last to be called. We found her sitting by a stairwell.
And you don't have that?
Well, no, not on a Social Security disability income.
She's retired, living on disability with no insurance, and her glasses don't work anymore. She got in, only to find out that the vision care line had closed.
How is your vision?
I bet in my left eye it's probably, I couldn't see your face. The Lord will take care of me. The Lord will provide.
But not today.
But not today. So I got to look for another option, but I'll find one.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. I have a lot of good friends, and I have a lot of church support. I was very active in my church. I have a lot of friends at church. I just hate to ask. I've worked all my life. I hate to ask. That's why things like this are so wonderful.
There is no shame in seeking health care.
No, you're right. You know, it really, I am sad that we are the wealthiest nation in the world and we don't take care of our own. So, but it will be okay.
And it did turn out okay after all. Someone at RAM noticed Joanne's situation. They put her in the vision care line and examined her for a new pair of glasses.
If I may have your attention, please. I'm afraid that we've got some rather disappointing news.
But at the gate, many were waiting when the weekend ended.
449 and 450.
In the expedition to Knoxville, RAM saw 920 patients, made 500 pairs of glasses, did 94 mammograms, extracted 1,066 teeth, and did 567 fillings. But when Stan Brock called the last number, 400 people were turned away.
What's going through your mind when you're reading off the last two or three numbers and you see so many more people at the gate than are going to be able to come in?
Yeah, well, you know, that's the lousy part of this job. I mean, it's nice to, you know, to be able to know that you've helped a bunch of people, but the reality is that we can't do everybody. At the moment, we're just doing the thousands and thousands of people that we can, and the rest of them, unfortunately, have got to do the best they can without us.
So, thanks for listening. And I don't know if we have time for questions or not, but I'll stay afterwards if anybody has any questions. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Osborne. I was inspired with that self-sacrificing service, and it reminded me that 27 years ago, on the Amazon River, I pulled my first tooth. Now, I do need to tell you that story before we summarize. I was 21 years old and working on the Amazon. We were up outside of Beiling. We were about 300 miles up in the jungle on the river. And I was working with a physician to get my first taste of medical missionary evangelism. And I was there working on the Lucero 6. And as I was working there initially, my responsibility was to lead the patients to the physician. But after a while, the physician was so overwhelmed. He was a doctor, a medical doctor, but we also had to do dental work and a variety of other things. And so he said to me, "Mark, young man, I need to teach you how to pull teeth." And so he did. We did not have anesthesia. We sat our patients on a little stool. I put my first patient's head on my knee. I knew two Portuguese words at that time, obra and fecha. Obra meaning open, fecha meaning closed. And abre, yes. And so, capazes três meses a Brasil, falando português pouco, no muito. Okay, anyway. I love Brazil. I've been traveling back there for 28 years. So anyway, put this lady's head on my knee and told her to open her mouth, which she did, pulled the tooth. The dentist came over to examine my work, and he said, literally, "Mark, that was a beautiful job you did. There is only one problem. You pulled the wrong tooth." The next three I pulled, I was a little more cautious and was correct. So thank you for instructing us how to do it the right way. I have a question for you as we summarize our seminar tonight. I will give you a quote. You tell me who made this quote and when it was made. You ready to go? Back in medical school. Okay, here's the quote. "The greatest error in medicine today is that we treat the body and not the soul." When was the statement made and who made it? You're close. Okay. Plato, you've got it. 2,400 years ago, Plato made this observation. "The greatest error in medicine today is we treat the body and not the soul." In our seminar during this weekend, we have focused on whole person care. The focus of Amen is quite distinctly different than many other medical dental association meetings, because the purpose of Amen is to look at human beings as a whole person and to treat their physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual needs. We studied, as you recall, a model in whole care, whole person care, in looking in John the 4th chapter, and we made three presentations on Jesus and the woman at the well. And we titled those presentations "Applying Jesus' Methods in Clinical Care in the 21st Century." And we looked at the seven different statements that Jesus made to that woman. And we looked at research done by the Disney Corporation on Florida Hospital. We reminded you that Florida Hospital has 24 hospitals in this area with 23,000 employees. That Florida Hospital is the number one hospital in the state of Florida, and it has more admissions than any hospital in America today. And one of the things that we have done at Florida Hospital is we invited the Disney Corporation to come in and to do research on patient care. And as that research was done, Disney looked at the seven major questions that every patient has. And I reviewed with you from John chapter 4 how Jesus went through those seven particular points. The first thing Jesus did in John 4 was to give the woman attention. Every patient desires attention. They want to be more than a commodity, more than a statistic,
more than merely a name on your list of patients that day. Jesus gave her attention. Secondly, as you study John chapter 4, Jesus showed the woman respect. He said, "Would you please get me something to drink?" A Jewish man talking to a Samaritan woman. The Jews and Gentiles had a great conflict, and Jesus said, "Would you give me something to drink?" Jesus showed her utmost respect. Every patient longs for respect. Thirdly, Jesus showed her sympathy. He said, "I know you'd like to drink this water, but I have a water for you that's much, much better than this." He showed sympathy for her. He was saying to her, "Ma'am, I know you're longing for something greater." Fourthly, Jesus gave her hope. Here was a desperate, discouraged, downhearted woman. Here was a woman that was longing for something more than she had. And if you study that narrative, Jesus gave her hope. Each patient that comes in to your office, each person that comes to your dental chair is looking for some hope. Hope for relief of pain. Hope that the diagnosis is not as bad as they thought it was. Hope for something better. Jesus offered her hope. Fifthly, Jesus looked at this woman and he discussed very, very openly with her her condition. He told her the truth. He said, "You know, go get your husband." She said, "Well, I don't have any husband." Jesus said, "I know the man you're living with is not your husband, neither with other those five." Jesus told her the truth. Deep within the heart of every patient, that patient that comes into your office, wondering about whether the lump in the breast is malignant or not, wondering what if they're going to have an operation because of their stomach pain. They want to know truth. They want to know reality. That's the fifth thing Jesus did. Sixthly, Jesus made a transition into the spiritual modality. And we talked about how to make a transition into spirituality with some patients. Remember the phrase we used? Remember that phrase we talked about? Offer to all, force none. Offer to all, force none. And we gave some different models of how you might bridge into spirituality. You're talking to a patient, and you may say something like this: "I sense, John, that you feel very anxious, very tense about what you are going through. And I can really understand that because I've had some challenges in my life where I have felt unusually tense as well. And, you know, I've wondered what kind of future that I might have. And I've, you know, as a physician, I've faced certain challenges too. And, you know, as a Christian physician, I've drawn on God for help and for strength. May I pray for you and ask God to give you that strength?" So one bridge is your own testimony. Another bridge might be saying something like this: "You know, John, many of the patients that I talk to really would like somebody to pray with them. I certainly wouldn't want to superimpose or force that upon you, but many of my patients really appreciate the fact that I pray with them. Would that be possible for me to do with you?" Another way to do it is something like this, and you, the Holy Spirit, can guide you as you work with your patients. But another way to do it is something like this. You say to your patients, "You know, as we've talked today, I can sense that you have some real questions about this diagnosis. Where do you find your support? Is there somebody or some place you find a lot of support? Because I can just sense you're concerned and you want to share with me about your support base," and they begin to talk about it. "Does faith play any part of a support for you? Do you have a pastor?" Some people say, "Oh, yes, I do." Or some people say, "No, I don't." "May I share with you where I find strength at that period of time?" So you can ask a person, "Where do you find your greatest support at a time like this?" And those opportunities present open opportunities to minister spiritually. So the sixth thing that Jesus did is he made that transition into spirituality. But when you look at the seventh thing Jesus did, he offered the ultimate solution. He offered a solution. And in the offering of that ultimate solution, which in this case was the Messiah, but When people leave your office, you offer them the ultimate solution of hope so that every patient, and even if the diagnosis is, let's suppose the diagnosis that you have is quite fatal, there can be always bathing that in hope. We gave you a book called The Patient Experience. And this patient experience is largely the Disney research and how it's been applied. There are three pages that I wanted you to particularly note, and I will simply review them. Page 26 is a page that I hadn't referred you to before in the patient experience. And in that page, on page 26, there is a chart that I really don't want you to miss. It deals with, you know, Disney's all into acts in the drama. And here are three specific acts. The first phase, the patient says, I'm afraid, or I'm certain, I'm in pain. The second act, I'm alienated, I'm bored, I'm lonely. Third act, I feel inadequate, unprepared, abandoned. And it shares how you can provide trust, belonging, and hope for those patients. So be sure to take, are there some of you that weren't here during that period of time, did not get a copy of the patient experience? Would you just raise your hand? Want to be sure that we put a copy of the patient experience in the hand of each of you who do not have one. And so if you do not have the patient experience, just raise your hand, keep it up, and some of our ushers will come to you and be sure to put this in your hand. This will be really helpful. Look at page 35 as well. One of the things we emphasized is how to train your staff so that they are sensitive to whole person care. And on page 35, it talks about nurses, doctors, everything from nutritional services, lab technicians, how to train your staff. You'll find that extremely helpful. We need some books in the front row. Thank you very much. And on page 48, there is another helpful section. So use this quite regularly. You'll find it quite helpful in analyzing how to do whole person care. On page 48, we talk about five service behaviors behind a superior patient experience. What did Disney tell us were the five service behaviors that you can train your staff in that communicate an excellent experience? We trust that this seminar has been practical for you and help you. And I end with a story. On an Indian reservation, a young Indian, and this Indian reservation was in the United States, Midwest, young Indian teenager, 17 years old, came into the emergency room in the hospital, little tiny hospital, with a broken arm. The emergency room physician treated him, reset the arm, and casted the arm. The young boy went home. About 2 days later, the emergency room physician in that little community was well known, of course, was in a general store. The leader or chief of the tribe came in, and he said to the emergency room physician, I am very disappointed in you. And the emergency room physician said, look, I don't understand. I am a skilled physician, and the arm was set correctly. And the leader of the tribe said, yes, it was, but you will see the boy again. And he went to walk away. And the physician walked after him and tapped him on the shoulder and said, please explain to me what you mean. And he said this, you cured his broken arm, but you didn't heal the boy. Because you never discovered why he broke his arm. I was in the home 2 days later and discovered that the boy's father came home drunk. He was beating the boy. The boy jumped on his bike and was so afraid of the father that he was riding as fast as he could down the hill, hit a bump, fell off the bike and broke his arm. You did a great job, Doc, in healing the boy's arm, in curing the boy's arm. You did a very poor job in healing his heart. Medical missionary work, following the ministry of Jesus Christ, looks at more than broken arms. It looks at broken hearts. It looks at more than shattered bones. It looks at shattered souls. It looks at more than decayed teeth. It looks at decayed spirits. And the medical missionary work of Jesus Christ ministers hope and encouragement and the joy of knowing Jesus. Let me pray for you. Father in heaven, thank you for a group of godly men and women, doctors and dentists who have a deep commitment to giving hope to the hopeless, to ministering possibilities to those who struggle with the impossible. Thank you that you've called us to something broader and deeper than one-dimensional ministry to the body. Thank you that you've called us to holistic health, to ministering to bodies and minds and souls. Thank you that the great physician modeled forgiveness and freedom from guilt, and the magnificence of his love and the joy of eternity. Thank you that we hear the echoes of the one that said, "Follow me and I'll make you fishers of men." As we follow in the footsteps of Jesus, we're thankful, so thankful, that we have something worth living for. That medicine has a purpose, a divine purpose, an eternal purpose. And we commit ourselves to that in Christ's name. Amen.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.